Welcome to Cannon Fodder, a behind-the-scenes look at the Glass Cannon Podcast.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Welcome back. Joe here.
And your old buddy Troy.
And we are here to bring you another week of Cannon Fodder.
Yeah, I'm excited for this one.
You know what Cannon Fodder is, Troy?
What is it?
It's a weekly recap and look behind the scenes at the Glass Cannon Podcast.
I thought you were going to say it's the hottest thing on the interweb right now. Because that's what it is to me.
Well, we're 5 weeks in and it is blowing up. People are loving it. It's exciting to hear from you guys, to hear how much you are enjoying the show and also giving us ideas for stuff to put in the show, which is really awesome. In fact, it's on the docket for today. We have a fan question to get to. We also want to recap the episode. And let me just say, and I don't want to do this too much on Cannon Fodder, but I have a hard time not really getting so excited about our episodes and on our game because I love it so much. Mm-hmm. But it's one of my favorite episodes.
You know what? You've said this to me off air. What made it one of your favorites?
Well, I love a sandbox, you know? And my favorite part of the sandbox is the beginning of the sandbox. Like right at the start where you have to... And I'm sorry, I should also say... I should clarify, not a sandbox in the sense of like... You have this huge open world and you could go to this village or this village or this village and do diplomacy here or attack these people. Like that's one kind of thing. What I really like is storm the fortress sandbox.
Right.
When you're looking at a target and you have to take it out. And to me, it's reminiscent of some of the video games that I love, you know, a Metal Gear Solid or a like Mercenaries going way back to Xbox, which was designed to allow you to have a mission objective. There's a guy in there that you have to get out, and there is so many ways that you can go about it that that's part of the fun. And it's also that trial and error aspect, but you don't get that in Pathfinder. There is no trial and error aspect.
No.
There's no loading a former save. So it has
this mostly error in our game.
Right. It's mostly just error. But yeah, you have this concept of having all these decisions in front of you and trying to make quote unquote the right one, but also whatever line you choose, you are committed to that. You know, you got to just do it. So anyway, I loved it. I thought it was awesome and really fun. And I just wonder, you know, in general, your thoughts, first of all, on what the players did with that sandbox. You know, you had laid out, you were very clear with us. It is a sandbox.
Right.
Did the players do what you expected?
No. I mean, yes and no. I prepared for that because and we'll talk later about preparations for a sandbox, but I mean, I prepared for that as an option, but I thought you guys would do something different. I certainly didn't think Galabras would do a flyover.
Did you even know he could fly?
Nope.
I didn't think so.
Yeah.
He snuck that one past you.
That was very cool. And you know, that's what's fun for me is like, I can surprise you guys left and right, but I like it when you surprise me because it keeps me on my toes. Like, okay, you want to do a flyover? Well, this is what you see. And what adventure do you get the opportunity? You guys have a map of the first level and now you have a general sense of what's going on up top. So cool.
Right. Well, it's very cool, but it also puts a lot of pressure on the players because you can really see all of the decisions that are out in front of you and you're under this stress to choose the correct one. And, you know, knowing the whole fort's layout, knowing everything that we saw in there, I mean, obviously Galabras' flyover was huge. So let me ask you about that because
yes,
we were all surprised by that. You just admitted right here that Skid had never told you that Galabras could fly.
No. And honestly, he probably can. He just made it up on the spot because that's what Skid does.
But it's very clever.
He's like, I can fly now.
You went ahead and... you know, allowed him to do it, allowed him to get to see an overview of the whole fort. Mm-hmm. For you as a GM, was that frustrating because he was getting to see all the stuff that you wanted us to kind of be surprised finding, you know, moment to moment in the fort? Or I could also see that being maybe a relief for you because you got to lay out everything at once and you didn't have to remember it over multiple sessions. Like, what do you think?
At first I was like, oh, all right, how am I going to deal with this? I want to give you some information. I don't want to give you too much. But then I thought, you know, this is actually relieving because it's so overwhelming to prep a session like this and the next, you know, X amount of sessions that I was glad to be able to tell you, okay, here's what's out here, because then I can hear you guys talk about what you want to do and formulate a plan, and it helps me in my preparation. If you guys are saying, all right, you know, I think we're going to go to the Great, then I can start being, all right, looks like they're going to go to the Great. Let me prepare what's going on over there.
So, you know what? I want to get in more into the prep, how mm-hmm. you go about prepping a sandbox, the DM aspects of it, GM aspects of it, a little bit later. First, I want to go through a little bit of the story, the recap of the story, because a lot happened in this episode.
Yeah.
You know, there was getting to the fort and just even seeing its layout and what's going on in there. I mean, you know, you see fighting pits with orcs cheering on Umlo fighting these bear-like creatures, possibly right. bears, and you see all these huts in the
the
moat.
Used to be the moat, right?
What used to be the moat.
What the hell's going on there?
Now, without the flyover, I mean, I guess we would think with because there was a dam, the river had been dammed. We assumed that there was no water in the moat already, but we didn't know that there would be huts.
And if Galabras hadn't done a flyover, you guys would have climbed over that wall and been like, "What the hell are these huts doing here? What's going on?" And not known that like there are huts all around the moat.
Right, right, exactly. So that was really awesome insight. But it leaves us in this position where we're seeing that there's a lot of orcs camped here. And we know there's giants here. So it's an extremely intimidating fort to kind of punch through. I know Lork was driving toward the sewer grate because he wanted to try to get in, you know, as secretly as possible. So I enjoyed the run to the palisade to climb over. You know, that was tense. You rolled for a patrol to see us or find us. And, you know, that came up. We got lucky there because I was like, oh my God, if we're caught in the open ground out here fighting these things right in front of in open daylight, you know, that's bad news.
Right.
But we got out, we got over the wall, which was that alone was just fun.
So fun.
You know, and that makes me think of the Barry Connick Jr. thing. Like, what does he scamper up the wall? We're like, oh, we'll tie a rope to him. Like,
you'll hang him. You kept saying, I think we could do it. I think we could tie a rope. What are you guys saying? Like, you will murder him.
How does that work, do you think, generally, as a GM? You know, what do you do when players have animal companions in situations that are just so brutal to think about actually stealthily moving through the halls of a fort with a bear?
Right. Well, it really nerfs you guys, especially you, Lork, if I'm like, you know, your bear companion, that's basically one of the most exciting things about your character. You can't bring it into the next 40 sessions or whatever. You know, that's no fun for you. But like, it's one thing where Adela was thinking, maybe we bring Reginald. What, are you just going to tie him to a tree? You would come back and she would be eviscerated.
Right.
But likewise, I'm not going to be like, are you going to just hide Barry Connick Jr. in these bushes and we'll come back to him if we succeed on this fort raid?
Well, what about going into detail about how you're going to get the bear into this room or up this climb check or over this, you know, this pool of water or whatever it may be in the fort that we may come across, that some, you know, something where you need opposable thumbs to get over, you know, what do you do as a GM when you come up with those? Do you force the player to figure it out, or you just say, suspend disbelief and just say, hey, you got to cross?
I think you got to pick and choose your battles. There's going to be points like, if you guys come up across, for example, I'm just making this up off the top of my head, like a huge waterway that you have to swim across, you know, Barry's going to have to roll those swim checks.
Right.
Or you're going to have to figure out an alternate solution. But, you know, making him roll every single climb check and every single stealth check, it gets boring after a while. You just got to pick and choose your battles. Like, I think it's fun if I can find a moment where you've actually got to deal with Barry. But I don't want that to be a constant thing. Like,
yeah.
Oh, don't forget Barry. What are you going to do with him?
Right, exactly. Not only does it grind the game to a halt, but you're right. It's all about picking your battles, I think. Choosing the right time to make it an issue, to make it a concern. I mean, look at what happened to Ben Vereen. It's like that was the time that you really put it on the spot. You're
right.
Like, what is Ben Vereen going to do? He's on the other side of this room. You're at the bottom with the lily pads. Is he going to run after you? Can you make him stay? And you got really into the nitty gritty of it. And it was all for good reason, because that was an epic moment. And it ended up, you know, it results in his death. So it's like, those are the times, I think, when you needle players about it and you nitpick about the situation and the rules and making it as real as possible, because it can result in that sort of like dramatic story.
Yeah.
But if you know it's not going to result in dramatic story and all it's going to result in is frustration of the players, then I don't know. Like, I'll give you an example of a game I was running where a player had a halfling had decided to start having a riding dog.
It's ridiculous.
I know. So now there was a mounted halfling on every square, you know, with a dog. And every time that said halfling wanted to jump off and do his roguish halfling stuff, which was like sneak alone into a room, hide behind stuff, get the jump on the enemy, get his surprise round, sneak attack before the other people got in the room, blah, blah, whatever, I'd be like, well, are you on the dog? Or, whatever, I'll leave the dog with the fighter. And the fighter's like, so I have to take care of the dog? And then it got to a point where eventually...
I can't use my weapon two-handed because I'm holding a leash in the other hand.
Exactly. We were in a quasi-dungeon crawl, and it got to a point maybe two or three sessions later where he was like, can I just take some time, backtrack the way we went, and walk the dog out of here and just let him go? And I was like, absolutely. You know, sometimes it's just
easier for everyone.
Right, exactly. Sometimes it just doesn't work, but
Who knows, you may come to a point either in the fort or in future things that Lork has to deal with where Barry's not going to be able to join you, and that's interesting as well.
Yeah,
even though you've poured tons of feats into
it. I know that's the thing that's tough about it, but
that's interesting.
Yeah, it is. So we get over the wall.
Yeah,
Lork, with a little bit of luck from Desna. Oh my God, that natural 20 to rip that grade off. I was like, yes! I was so excited. And just the image of it, you know, this kind of middle-aged guy. He's now back in the field long enough, you know, a couple weeks now that he's been, you know, you figure he's been getting a lot of exercise. He's working out. And to have him just rip a metal grate out of a stone wall, I was like, you are the man!
While people were cheering, like waiting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was a great image. That was a great image. But then, you know, we get in there, oozes.
Yeah.
That is, they are such a creepy, freakish sort of character. And if I'm not mistaken, I mean, I'm not the greatest old school D&D thing, but guy, but these creatures go back all the way back to like original D&D. Like this ooze in the dungeon that you can't see. That's just like made of pure acid, burns you to pieces.
It's like filth has been around for so long, and the evil auras of magic, perhaps, that have laid dormant in this area have given life to filth. That's how I think of it, you know?
Yeah.
Because oozes, you know, they're not reproducing.
You know what right. I mean?
Just evil energy has mixed with filth to create these pain in the ass enemies that you can't crit.
Right, that you can't crit. Though we did get a natural 20 off there for some max damage. But I think that maybe you let us get away with a little bit of stuff there because I don't know. I mean, go back over the tape, but I think that there's a rule for oozes that it's just off the top of my head right now, but there's a rule for oozes that like if you spend a full round in the ooze, there's no like reflex save for damage done or anything like that. Anything metal that you're wearing just like takes 12 points of damage.
Yeah.
Something like that. And I don't know if it's like it has to be in a grapple or whatever condition, whatever, but it just automatically does damage to weapons and armor. That is where an ooze, I think, is really going to do its damage to you.
Right. Just attacking it with a weapon, you've got to roll a reflex save to see if that weapon takes damage.
DC 20.
I mean, it's no joke. Yeah, maybe I let you get away with a little much, but you guys handled yourselves. Had Della noticed it, you guys could have just backed up, taken your time, and pot shot it magic from far away. But you walked.
Missed that perception check by one.
By one.
She rolls a 14 instead of a 15.
Yeah.
Makes all the difference. So anyway, we finish those, get in there, and then here's the thing. Now we're getting into the nitty-gritty of the story right at the end of the episode. Closing up that Lork is pulling the great closed, and he hears. What does he hear?
Hit him up like you always do. General's orders.
Right. Oh, man.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good reproduction.
Proud of yourself?
Was that right? I don't know. Something like that. What's that all about?
I know. So we hear this voice. Assume it's Umlo.
That's Umlo's voice now.
No, yeah.
Sounds like a lot very orcish.
Assuming it's Umlo getting healed, you know, mm-hmm. What? They're just healing him and sending him back in? I mean, that's like... what a gruesome sort of idea if that's what they're doing. And who's doing the healing?
Right.
You know, that's the other question.
Are you asking me? Because I'm not going to tell you.
Damn it. I thought maybe you just spit it out.
I almost just spit it out. It's like, well, let me tell Joe, you son of a gun. You rolled a 20 on your bluff check.
Well, we're going to play and find out, you know, as soon as possible. Though the other thing is, I don't even know if I want to go out there.
Right. You guys
We just got in the grate.
Right.
Why would I go out there to find this out? But if there's some sort of healer, I mean, it's obviously some sort of prisoner healer, right? If it's like, heal him up like you always do, general's orders.
Maybe, maybe not.
Oh, God damn it. All right,
Find out next week or the week after? It's up to you guys. You guys choose your own adventure.
Right. All right, let's move on to a little prep talk for GM stuff. And this goes right in with a great question we got from a fan. Mitch Alexander writes in. Mitch, thank you so much for writing a really great question. He says, I'd like to hear more about Troy's prep. As someone who has played in or DM'd only homebrew, I'd love to know what's in the module, what he comes up with, and how much of the module accounts for going off the reservation, as it were. Unquote. So, can you just tell us everything in the fort that you made up versus what's actually in there?
Oh, Joe, it's so hard to talk about my process.
Oh, my God.
You know, I like to just close my eyes and let the dungeon unfold for itself.
Oh, my God.
In my mind's eye.
And now you're a fucking Hollywood director on Charlie Rose all of a sudden.
I can. It's a tough question to answer in terms of what I created and what I didn't create, because sometimes I don't like to let you guys know what I created because I think you'll take it less seriously. Well, and maybe that's just me, because I take it less seriously when I know other DMs have done stuff. I'm like, oh, well, that's not in the module. I guess that wasn't important. But I will say...
You know, that's a good point. It's like keeping that veil, you know, of
right.
secrecy of that... You know, the Wizard of Oz kind of thing. You know, the man behind the curtain. Like, you don't want to reveal too much of what you're doing versus what is pre-written, because you don't want to give the players some reason to, like you said, think that one thing is more important than another, or that one thing is more fated than another, you know?
But I will, and you know what I will say? Like, for example, the death of Jason. Spoiler alert, if you're not caught up. That's obviously there's not something in the module that says, and then you kill the incompetent ranger's half son at the end of an episode.
Right.
You know, but I will give you a little tidbit. I think I've mentioned this on the Twitch before. If not, I'm mentioning it for the first time. And you may not even know this if I didn't mention it before. For example, on Rag's Keelboat, the only information they gave me about his half orc crew were their names. And they said that Gajnak was under the influence of Malira. But all the other stuff that I created with Shog and Tog and his relationship
the brothers
with the Halrex. Yeah, it doesn't say they're brothers. I just said, oh, they sound like they might be brothers.
Oh, wow, the tattoos, the matching tattoos.
It literally just gave me their names and a stat block for the crew members in case they had to fight.
And that was really immersive. Like, that was part of it. I mean, you told me this. Yes, you did say this on the Twitch, but I didn't even know that they weren't brothers, or that they didn't say they were brothers.
Like, you know...
You talked about on the Twitch, you talked about Halrex and Tog not having a romantic relationship. And that was like a key point of that interrogation.
Right, it was just...
It was the red herring.
Yeah, and I came up with that mid-episode. I didn't have any of that prepared. I just saw where you guys were going and I wanted to give you a red herring. You know, when you first came up and they were gambling and fighting and I had one guy be kind of an asshole, I literally just looked at the names and I was like... This guy seems like a real dick. Yeah, I didn't have any of that plan, just kind of bebop and scat. So a lot of people are afraid, I think, not afraid, but like they love homebrews because they don't want to be railroaded with a campaign where everything is created for you. And I use this as a great example of you can create so much.
Yeah, it can give you a great foundation to work with, and then you can do whatever you want with it, use as much or as little. And a great idea if you are running a pre-written campaign is to go online and read what other DMs did.
Absolutely.
And GMs did.
And what they changed.
And you get more great ideas and you can mold it to fit your players and your characters. You know, I will say on that note that when we came out of the Vault of Thorns with Gorm's Thorn, when Lork got Gorm's Thorn, I asked you if it was in the module or if you just made it up. And like, I'm realizing now that I probably shouldn't do that. But I will say, to be honest, that when you said it was in the module and was it made up, it meant more to me than if you had made it up. Because it felt like it was, like Lork was the right character in this world. That
right,
you didn't
right.
change the world to fit Lork. Lork fit into the world as it should be. I don't know. And that is unfair. Mm-hmm. You know, it is. It should have the same meaning no matter what. And so maybe it's a good idea to not reveal too much of what you made up versus what's in the module.
Yeah. Or sometimes I'll just lie to you guys and be like, yep, totally in the module. But Gorm's Thorn actually was.
Well, let me get back to his initial sentence, which is, I'd just like to hear more about Troy's prep. So we know, you know, a little bit more about what you do in terms of, you know, homebrew or how you adjust your pre-written campaigns with stuff. And sometimes you even do it on the fly.
Right.
You don't necessarily prep everything. And we can't go into too much detail about that right now because, like you said, you don't want to reveal too much to us. And we have things coming up in this fort that we don't know about.
Right.
But what about the sandbox prep for this fort in general?
Oof,
like, what is that process? How did you go about prepping this whole fort, not knowing which entrance we would go in?
Well, this presents a very unique circumstance for preparation. And to be honest, it's not my favorite sort of preparation, because if I know generally what you guys are going to do between one and two options, I can really prepare the hell out of that. So with this, where you have a million different options, it's just harder for me to prepare with the same depth, or at least remember what I prepared with the same depth. So I guess what I can talk about and I won't go too long, this is just my general preparation. When I first get an adventure path, I just read it through once without taking any notes, without looking at cross-referencing, what does that feat do? What does that weapon do? I just read it to understand the story. And then when I'm preparing for an actual session, I will reread, I'll start the reread, and that's where I'll be taking notes. So if you see a monster stat box, usually what takes the most time for me is looking up the feats of these creatures that you fight against, because a lot of times I'm just not familiar what that feat does. That's the beauty of Hero Lab, because where I have the Giant Slayer GM pack for Hero Lab, all the encounters are in there, and I can just click on a button. Oh, that's what blind fighting is. Oh, that's what rapid shot does. So it helps expedite the process of preparation. I draw my maps ahead of time if I can.
But you couldn't though.
Yeah, for
you know, in this
really
case,
good.
You couldn't. So, what did you do in terms of all the encounters that could have happened in or at any part of those walls? Did you lightly prep all of it? Did you seriously prep all of it? Did you prep only the thing you thought we would do and one alternate route? And if we went another way, maybe stop the recording for a second and read up? Because you didn't stop anything. We just rolled with it. So to say that you had no idea we were going to do that and then to so seamlessly execute it, you must have had some level of prep of the sewer grate, its numbers, the oozes, you know what I mean?
I knew unless all of you could turn invisible and fly, there were probably half a dozen options for you at the beginning. So it allowed me to really to do a very solid preparation of those half a dozen or so.
Yeah, that's not too many.
Right. And now that I know you've gone through the sewer grate, there's X, Y, and Z, and
Well, now we're here.
ABC.
Yeah, we're in this spot.
So now I don't have to say, they didn't go in the front door, so I don't have to worry about that so much.
For a while, at least.
Unless you go out there and, let's try the front. Oh, all right, now I got to go back to that prep. But, I mean, what I have done, I think that for a session, for a four-hour session, for example, I usually do probably 3 to 4 hours of prep for that session. For our things, I do a couple hours of prep. So for Red Lake Fort, I've just done those 3 to 4 hours of prep well in advance for every possible encounter, so that when you guys come to it, I can just go to my notes and be like, all right, give me a second. All right, let's do this and jump right in. It's been a lot of preparation and I can't wait until Red Lake Ford is over.
Well, I'm excited to get deeper into it, buddy. I think that's all I had for today. I don't know if you wanted to add anything else in particular about that episode or anything.
No, I mean, I could go into depth to a boring extent on what my preparation really entails. But I think, as a DM, the most important thing I can say is do your preparation. Don't just show up and try and wing it, because you're doing a disservice to the module, you're doing a disservice to your players, and you're doing a disservice to yourself.
You heard it here first. You heard it here
first. You just rolled a one on talking.
I did. Oh, man. Oh, speaking of ones, Lork's first shot in Red Lake Fort. One. Natural one. Anybody surprised? All right, guys, that's going to wrap it up for us here. Thank you so much for tuning in to Cannon Fodder once again, checking it out, sending in your emails with your questions. We have so many. We're backed up. We're going to have them for weeks to come. So keep them coming, and as long as they fit what we're talking about, we're going to plug them in and get back to you guys. Email us at glasscannonpodcast@gmail.com to get those questions in. And don't forget to check out the Twitch. Follow the Twitch. Watch Troy playing Dark Souls 3, and remember to subscribe to that YouTube channel. Give us some subscriptions there. All right, guys, we will see you next week. Please enjoy episode 60.
Oh, baby.